Hey, what it do, sports fans? Welcome to the Sports Live podcast brought to you by Multimedia Live. I'm Sboom Jikeliso, your host, and I will be joined by various guests on this exciting new podcast to discuss the latest ins and outs of the sporting world. We have another amazing episode for you this week, sports content galore. What a turnaround in fortunes as well for our national teams. The Proteas finally put up a decent performance and ended their World Cup on a highish note when they beat Australia by 10 runs last Saturday. And Bafana Bafana stunned Egypt 1-0 to knock the host nation out of the Africa Cup of Nations thanks to a Tembinkosi Loach goal. South Africa move into the quarterfinals where they face Nigeria, while the hosts will watch the rest of the tournament from their lounge sofas. But before we delve deep into the latter of those two stunning events, let's check in with other major sports talking points. The USA women's national team won back-to-back FIFA Women's World Cup titles when they beat the Netherlands 2-0 thanks to a Megan Rapinoe penalty and a Rose Lavelle goal in the 69th minute last Sunday. Now, Frank Lampard was named as Chelsea coach last Thursday, which is excellent news for me. Everybody knows that I'm a major Chelsea fan, and having Lamps back at the bridge is certainly the best news I could have hoped for last week. Now, the Springboks are in Pretoria powdering their noses for the shortened rugby championship that begins with their clash against the Wallabies at Ellis Park on July 20th. One of the players who will be hoping to enhance his reputation in the eyes of head coach Rassie Erasmus is Bulls loose head Lizo Qoboka. He has been in outstanding form and as one of the most standout front rowers in this past Super Rugby season, for me that is. His scrummaging in tandem with tight head Trevor Nyakane made the Bulls one of the most competitive teams in the competition. I managed to catch up with not one but two former Springboks to discuss the Springbok front row options ahead of the Rugby World Cup, and that is Victor Matfield as well as Etienne Finn. This is what they had to say about the glut of front row options at Rassie Erasmus's disposal.
I think Rassie's got most of his combinations close to set in stone already. I think the one area where he'll probably have a think about is the front row, where I think he was pretty certain of the guys that were supposed to play there. And then now all of a sudden, I think the Bulls and the Lions front row actually upset a Stormers front row that's almost the starting lineup for the Springboks at the moment. So that's one area. But again, a lot of the time when they get to the right coaches, the right trainers, they change around and they play better. So we know what those guys can do and how well they can play. But that will probably be one area where he will have a look at some of the other players really performing well at the moment. Yeah, I wouldn't say Trevor. I will only play him tight head. He's playing so fantastically well there at the moment. And he's so mobile for a tight head prop. So I think the two of them really putting their hands up for to be picked in the World Cup. I think Trevor's experience, you know what you get from him. And like I said, he's another guy that can force turnovers as well at breakdown time. And then Lizo must be close to the final of the season. I think he's just been outstanding, scrumming-wise, running with the ball. He's probably the prop with the most meters with ball in hand at the moment, making meters. So, yeah, the two of them are definitely pushing very hard for those World Cup spots. And then the Skalk Brits, we know, I think he'll will probably be part of the squad, even if he's third choice, but his experience will be of a lot of help at the World Cup.
Now, Etienne Finn made his debut in the Springbok front row against France in 2001, and this was his view on the same topic.
What do you make of our front rows? We've seen a resurgence of a guy like Lizo Qoboka. We've seen Trevor do well at tight head, even though he's moved from loose head. Guys like Vincent Koch have come in for consideration. There's still the Coonies, there's still the Thomas Du Toit, Steven Kitsoff, Beast, obviously, who had an outstanding season yet again in Sharks colours. What do you make of our front row compilation?
Well, there's absolutely unbelievable props. You haven't mentioned a guy like Malherbe and
Rance Malherbe, yeah.
And Walker Lowe, who are right up there in terms of scrummaging power. It's all about what the South African management team want to achieve.
Yeah.
So they're going to pick gentlemen that they think can fulfill those objectives. So if you want to dominate, you're going to pick X amount of players.
Yeah.
If you want to move the ball around, you're going to pick a wide type of player. Yeah. So that call has to be made by them.
Yeah, fabulous. Who would you say, who would you start?
Who would I start?
Next week.
I believe in a totally dominant tight end.
Yeah.
And you may sacrifice a bit of mobility around that. So that's my primary tenor. And, I mean, a guy like Lizo's playing unbelievable rugby. Mm. So he'd be right up there. You know, with Beast back, I'd pick him as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, Malherbe, Wilco.
One of those two.
They can scrum, man.
Yeah, they can really, really give it a go.
And then Kulisi and the boys can play fun, have fun.
Staying with rugby, I was at Craven Week this past weekend and witnessed some of the best schoolboy rugby the tournament has ever seen. Even though the event is steeped in rugby tradition and has produced some of our most talented Springboks, lately it has failed to attract sponsors. I managed to get an exclusive chat with SA Rugby President Mark Alexander about a wide range of issues affecting the future of rugby in South Africa. You have to listen to this revealing interview. I'm sitting with the president of SA Rugby, Mr. Mark Alexander. We're here at Craven Week at Grey College in Bloemfontein. Mr. Alexander, in this tough economic climate, to put out and to be able to put out the Craven Week year in, year out, how have you guys as SA Rugby been able to pull this one off?
You know, we funded it out of our own funds, and I think these tournaments are very important for South African rugby. This is the nursery for rugby. Any right. organization is only as strong as its nursery. So we need to keep this nursery alive. The Craven Week is the stepping stone for our future Springboks.
Yeah.
Most of our Springboks have come and walked this route. And you can see what you see on the field. There's so much talent in South Africa.
Yeah.
And, you know, as far as transformation is concerned, you can see the boys are playing there. They're just not making up the numbers. I believe in 2 or 3 years' time, we won't even talk about the word transformation. It's happened naturally over time.
Yeah, and as we speak, we are witnessing an exciting game between Border as well as the Lions, whose two coaches have been appointed as the SA Schools and SA Academy coaches, and I'm talking about Mziwake Ngosi as well as Piwe Nomlomo. What does that actually mean for... It's not even doesn't even seem like a transformation selection.
No, these guys are picked purely on their talent.
Yeah.
They're not transformation appointments.
Yeah.
They pick because they are good. You know, the guys have come through the systems, and even the players, you can see they, you know, they're coming naturally through. They're not making up numbers anymore. It's not about quotas and stuff. We don't have quotas.
Yeah.
We have rugby players in South African rugby.
Excellent. And there's been great rugby on display here at Grey College. But the one big concern on people's minds is the talent that is hemorrhaging out of South Africa, especially at a very, very young age.
You know, the difficult thing we find in South African rugby, we cannot compete with the yen, the dollar. And if we try and do that, we'll actually bankrupt our organization.
Yeah.
So when the one door closes for an athlete, it opens the door for so many other athletes to come through. And we'll try our best to keep them here as long as possible. But, we cannot compete against the foreign currencies. Our currency is just too weak.
Yeah. And the Craven Week itself, has it lost nothing over the years in terms of appeal to people?
This is the biggest schoolboy rugby tournament in the world.
Yeah.
You know, it has served this organization for many, many years and will continue doing that. So we're very proud of these competitions. This competition, the Varsity Cup, the Gold Cup.
Yeah.
They produce the Springboks of tomorrow.
What makes it youth rugby so appealing, just on that point? Because you've managed to add LSEN Week as well to the youth weeks. You've managed to add a Girls Week as well, which I think very progressive if we're talking about equal opportunity in the sport. How have you managed to broaden those horizons within the sport?
I think if you talk about the Girls Week, you talk about the atmosphere.
Yeah.
You know, these are the boys. The atmosphere is much better than the girls.
Oh, okay.
A lot of years. And really, I'm excited where the girls' rugby is going.
Yeah.
And we have chosen women's rugby as our legacy program for the British and Irish Lions. We want to fast track it. We believe there's a lot of untapped talent
right.
out there.
Yeah.
We are catching up with the rest of the world. We'll get there.
Yeah.
But the kids, the girls, you can see, are improving year in and year out. They're improving. So
yeah.
There'll be a lot of focus in the next couple of years on women's rugby.
again, the sponsorship question is going to come in. What is the plan to sort of reel sponsors back in and actually support?
I think you know what's happened in South Africa, the market has become too small for sponsorship.
Right.
We've got too many other challenges, and we have to look abroad, and we are looking abroad. So then, in the next couple of months, we'll make some new announcements.
Okay.
And you'll see that there's some other things happening in rugby worldwide. Worldwide in rugby, the stuff talks about a Nations Cup.
Yeah.
We should bring new money into the game.
Yeah.
That talks about commercial right bidders buying commercial rights up of national federations and maximizing the revenues.
Yeah.
So there are a lot of activities, and we will make an announcement in the very near future of where South African rugby is going. And I think our competition will be better funded going forth from next year onwards.
Fabulous. Thanks very much, Mark Alexander. All the best.
Thank you.
Tune in to Cargumentative every Monday morning on Times Live Motoring. You can join myself, Thomas Faulkner, and my regular gang of automotive misfits as we discuss motoring news, views, and of course have a cargument or two. That's Cargumentative only on Times Live Motoring.
To advertise on the Sports Live podcast, email us at smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Now, I can't wait till I say this is the Sports Live podcast brought to you by, this is your name, your entity, your brand, right after the Sports Live podcast. That's smiths@tisoblackstar.co.za. Smith S, S-M-I-T-H-S at tisoblackstar.co.za. And we are back. Like I said at the top of the show, we will be delving deeper into the Bafana Bafana conversation with what we usually have is a special guest at the end of this nice little episode that we've put together for you. And this week's guest, I cannot speak highly enough of. He is one of the sports editors that have influenced me as a sports writer, and he is a multi-award winning sports journalist in his own right. He's one of the most respected voices in football, and you can catch him either following Novak Djokovic on Wimbledon screens. Big Novak Djokovic fan. I'm talking about none other than Mninawa Ndloko himself. Welcome to the Sports Live podcast, Dad.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can follow Mninawa Ndloko on @NdlokoM on Twitter. He is the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department head. And I do owe a lot to him, but this relationship goes far back as Business Day, almost 10 years ago now. I don't want to reveal both our ages, but how have you found the Africa Cup of Nations?
Yeah, it's been a... Look, remember, this is the first time it's 24 teams.
Right,
so this is a maiden tournament. So, I mean, the hope was that the change, I mean, the addition, the additional teams that come into this tournament, the idea was we see a bit more football, a tournament that's a little bit more open. Because, you know, traditionally with these events, you tend to have the same winners. It's always the usual suspects. So the hope when you get more teams increasing from 16 to 24.
Yeah.
So we were all crossing our fingers that we actually saw better football in the tournament. Look, it's debatable that in some of these games that you could say we have. But what I like about it, there's been an element of surprise. There've been some quite some impressive results here, and I think that it just goes to a little bit of the openness. I mean, who thought Morocco would be out
To Benin?
Exactly. Look at Madagascar; they've got to be the surprise of the tournament.
Beat Nigeria, beat DRC,
and look at them. Hell, who thought Bafana would knock out the hosts?
I thought that would have been the first thing you would have said in terms of shockers.
I leave that for last. That's the idea. Leave that one for last. But I mean, this is the nature of this event. I think it's just worth the price of the ticket which, by the way, I hear are very expensive in Egypt, which is why you're not seeing that many people.
I think they might drop down at least by 50% now that the hosts are out. And speaking of which, yeah. Bafana, do you think that the what you spoke about, opening it up, maybe putting the cat amongst the pigeons, hoping for a Madagascar, hoping for what Bafana did, has actually helped Bafana in the sense that if this was still group stages, only the top two qualify for the knockout stages, and if this was still 16 teams, do you think Bafana would have had this window?
Yeah, you see, here's the thing. If football is a weird sport.
Yeah.
I think for me, there's more room for results like these. I remember someone asked me last week, and they thought we had absolutely no chance. In fact, the idea was we only had to show up, roll over, and play dead at the Egyptians' feet.
Yeah.
And then the referee blows final whistle, and then we go back home like the dutiful losers that we were supposed to be. But my thing is this. Knockout football, anything is possible.
Yeah, yeah.
And Bafana was, I remember I was saying to these guys, Bafana was so bad in the group stages that they could actually go on and win this thing.
That is the irony.
you know, when a team
when
a team is so bad that you can't find a redeeming feature, and but then this is what happens because the Egyptians are overconfident.
Yeah,
they've seen this team in the group stages. They have won all of their matches, 9 points in the bag. We scraped in at. I think we finished as the last team.
The last qualifying team.
As the very last
possible.
Team
to
get in there. So I can understand the overconfidence on their part. It was unthinkable.
Yeah.
Bafana have not looked good, and it's not just this tournament. Their performances are weird. I think it was, I think it might have been Baxter, or I've forgotten who it was. But he said, Bafana are quite an enigma because they can beat any team in the world on a good day. By the same token,
they can then lose.
Yes, and just when you think that, okay, now I'm hedging my bets on them, they look so good that you are impressed. That's the story of our life.
I think the qualifiers against the Seychelles are the perfect example.
Exactly.
You clap them 6-0, a record victory, and this time there's no questions about the referee.
There you go.
And then you go to the Seychelles, players take nice little cute pictures in bikinis on the beach, and then they can't get a goal, they can't get a result.
That's
in the Seychelles.
That's
just
our,
less than a week later.
That's our final for you. Look, the excitement out there after what happened at Cairo Stadium and the reaction. We were just chatting now with our colleagues on the digital platforms, and they are saying on Sunday morning, which is yesterday morning. There were so many people just sitting on the match report. I think they're still trying to fathom whether this really happened. They wanted to see for themselves. I mean, like several hours later, on Sunday morning, yesterday, there were so many people around, not just here, around the world, just reading the match report. I think it's more out of disbelief than anything else, just to see if it did really happen, or maybe they dreamt it up. And that's very rare.
Yeah.
We have major sporting events. And as soon as that peak during the game is over, then they move on to the next story, but not this one.
No.
So
this one is the gift that keeps on giving. Before we get into the game itself, we saw the resignations of the Egyptian Football Association president, who didn't just resign right off the bat. It was almost like one of those domestic suicides where he fired everyone on the technical staff and then fires himself on his way out. It's probably the most classic case of we don't believe what just happened. Someone has to take the fall, and before we pay for this crime, let's just end it now and in disgrace and just walk out. I don't think any sporting entity has had this many casualties after one single result in any sport. I can't recall.
Here's a funny thing about what just happened there. I spoke to this this journalist over there in Egypt, and they know the Egyptian FA and how they operate. They seem to believe that this is nothing but a PR stunt on the part of the Egyptian FA president.
Oh, what hell of a PR stunt!
So no, apparently their thing was he's taken the easy way out. He's done a short left, and then let them figure out what to do in the next cup, and then he's back again. Because apparently that's what they do. Yeah, because now this is because the newspapers. I was reading the Egyptian newspapers, the English ones. and the team has been dragged. The headlines. They came after Salah. They came after Trezeguet. They came after the team itself.
Hegazi, El Mohammadi,
all of them. And the FA itself. So my suspicion is that he might have taken the easy way out, and then just to make sure that he's not part of whatever happens there in the aftermath, as you try to make sense of what just happened. So it's interesting, but it doesn't take anything away from what you just said, that it's quite crazy that they responded this way. They've quit. Normally, I saw some people making a comparison with Safa and saying, well, what are the odds that you would see the Safa people quitting? And the team quitting as well. So it's quite interesting, but I don't know. We will see what happens, because African football, you see the same people over and over again. They'll appear to be walking away, and then a few months down the line they are back.
Yeah, they are in the corridors.
Yeah. So I mean, who am I to argue with a man who understands Egyptian football? Because he's adamant that this is nothing but a PR stunt. This man is taking the easy way out, and he'll be back.
That's insane. But it's still Bafana managed to induce this kind of reaction. I think there will be like mass depression in Egypt after this. When you consider that they easily have the best player in Africa. They have a player that's led Liverpool to a Champions League title, led Liverpool to two back-to-back finals, and probably one of the most insane English Premier League seasons we had, and a major contributing factor in that, in Mo Salah. He was not just a footballer. He made Time Magazine's 100 most influential people. He was being flown around the world. Now, what effect did it have on the team chemistry in Egypt, do you think, having a guy like Amir Warda, who was accused of sexually harassing women, not just recently where he got kicked out of the camp, but apparently in 2017 as well, he had sexually harassed wives of teammates. And Salah comes out in support of this guy. This guy gets brought back into the team. Did that maybe hamper them chemistry-wise, Egypt?
It's funny because in the aftermath of that game, they've brought all of that stuff back, because I'm reading all of these stories. Warda is back in the news again. They are accusing Salah of not taking the accusations that the man is facing seriously, because he led the calls for him to be reinstated back
in
the team, and now because of that, they've brought all of that back, and I think no one is spared there, including him, because now they're trying to make sense of what just happened. So you do get that, but I also think it wouldn't just be just about that.
Right.
I from where I'm sitting, my suspicion here is you've got 75,000 people inside the stadium. The pressure on these guys is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They are expected, because if you remember, don't forget, this team wins all three group matches. They have 9 points. But look at what happens. The Egyptian press, they are still not happy with the way the team is playing. They're questioning Aguero's tactics. They are arguing that he's too defensive. He doesn't play the type of football that they want to see.
Yeah.
And yet they've won all of their matches in the group stages.
I think they had a clean sweep where they didn't even concede a goal.
Yeah. So now So they still manage to put their team under that kind of pressure, where they are trying to find fault with every win. They're finding something to talk about that's negative about the coach and about the team itself. So once you put these guys under that type of a pressure and they are playing at home, it's almost as if you're hoping they'll prove you right and stumble. And that's the sort of pressure that they put on them. And then it comes to this, because now it's actually happened. And now they are out of the tournament, and then they get to say everything that they've wanted to say. I think we also had something similar, if you remember, 2013 when we hosted AFCON.
Right.
I think we played against Mali in Durban. It was a quarterfinal.
Yes,
and even then, the pressure there was to emulate the class of '96, which was also here on home soil. So that pressure was, well, everybody was saying, "Yeah, finally we can exercise the ghost and that monkey off of our backs, because we still keep on referring to '96,
right.
And that was an opportunity because it was at home. So the pressure, as the days came towards this game, you could see it was building, and then eventually we fell apart.
We collapsed.
Because of the insane pressure. Moses Mabhida is pegged to the rafters, and we stumbled. And my suspicion here is that the Egyptians as well, they put so much pressure on their team, they put so much expectation that they really expected them to play the best football there is out there, and to win convincingly with style. And when you put that type of pressure, and also you've got a Salah who's expected to perform miracles. This is a guy. They come with that attitude that, I mean, surely it's written in the stars. It's supposed to happen. So you can't have a situation where they can even think about a Bafana team that's scraped into the next round playing against them. And you get to a point where now they've been knocked out by them. So, I mean, I think it's a whole... But by the way, Clex, I think it's very important that we also don't take anything away from Bafana.
That's what I was going to get into.
Yeah.
Is let's talk about how different Bafana were against Egypt than they've been, I could possibly say, under Baxter's entire tenure.
Yeah.
That has to be... into Baxter's credit, because we give it to him when he's gotten wrong, and he got it terribly wrong in some of the matches in the group stages, horribly wrong against Morocco, which almost cost us a place in the knockouts. You could say the Ivorians were up for the taking in that first game. If we played our natural running game with lots of pace and lots of passing, we could have probably gotten a result against Ivory Coast. We tailed off in the second half. We were trying to hold on to a draw, made an error, which led to the goal that gave them the victory. But in this game, so different. We held on to the ball. We didn't hoof it up front high and hoping Motiba will work miracles on his own up there. We had ball-playing midfielders, Kamohelo Mokotjo as well as Bongani Zungu, and then Furman cleaning up at the back. And then you had the twin pace at Temigosi Loch as well as Percy Tau, not just having Tau by himself, having to provide the motor to the team. So all of that worked to South Africa's advantage in that there was an attacking game plan. How did you read Bafana's approach in this game particularly?
Well, Baxter did say, I think, on the eve of the game, after we qualified for the last 16. He did say that he would change tactics.
Yeah.
And I remember when I tweeted that that story, the reaction from people, it's quite funny, because they were like, please, what tactics? What is he talking about? What is it that he claims he will change for this game against Egypt?
Yeah.
And he did say that they would come out of their shell, they would open up a little bit, they would try and keep their structure. But he was quite adamant that one thing that they would do was not just sit back and invite Egypt to come at them. And interestingly enough, his basic tactics were quite straightforward. He said the plan was to cut supply from Salah as well as from Trezeguet.
Trezeguet.
It's exactly what they did. They cut the supply to them, and then after that they had Zungu there in midfield working his socks off. I think this is probably one of his best games that I've seen him in a Bafana shirt.
I'd say so.
Yeah,
say
so, so he was absolutely brilliant. And Motiba, who is who's vilified, people find fault from the way he wears his pants and whatnot.
No, we have to speak to that man about that tucked in shirt. Gaya ke, look good to, like he looks like a Nokiri.
That man
hilarious.
He worked his socks off, that man. He worked his socks off.
Yeah.
Look at the goal. Motiba's involvement from the build up.
The unselfishness.
It comes from a throw in.
Yeah.
It comes back to him. He brings it back in, and then he plays himself down the channel. I mean, it's quite amazing. Everybody did their job, I think, in that game. I think there's no one you can fault and say they didn't actually perform. Everybody performed their role, and they did exactly what they're required to do. And if you have a performance like that one, and then I mean, what more do you want? And then to cap it off with the Lodge goal. So I think for me, weirdly enough though, I mean, this for me, I don't even think this was Stuart Baxter's best game in charge. I still think his best game was the 2-0 win in Nigeria, because. Mm. That was for me one of the better performances that we've had away from home in a hostile environment.
And we never won in Nigeria.
No, we'd never.
Yeah, okay.
We'd never.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
And by the way, we'd never even beaten them in an actual official match before then.
Right. So we'd only beaten them in that one
just
friendly.
Yeah, and all of these things.
Yeah.
But never in an official fixture.
That was the game where Percy came in and finished, rounded it off against the keeper.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The performance in that game for me must rate as one of the best under Stuart Baxter, because there, if you thought we weren't given much of a hope against Egyptians in that game, We were totally, especially the Nigerians, their media and their fans, they were so adamant.
And when they launching a new stadium as well,
we went and silenced them there in the midst of all of that. And it was for me one of the best performances. And so this is why when I saw that we're up against them again, and also don't forget we went through the group stages unbeaten.
Mm.
They couldn't beat us in the group stage, in the
qualifiers.
Yeah,
yes.
In the qualifiers. But obviously, I mean, I history. I never look back at history. I always prefer to go to your
to
best
go on
game.
On tournament.
Yeah. Because quite frankly, I mean, you don't want to labor the point that this is what happened before.
Yeah,
I think for me, the it's how Baxter again approaches this one, and it's a sort of tactic and that he actually employs. And also, I mean, the suspended Zwane now returns. So it'll be interesting to see what does he do with Lodge, and all sorts of things, because you remember Lodge played because it was a forced change. Mm. So I would quite
but now, dominoes have fallen. By the time this comes out, Bafana will be preparing for that quarterfinal clash against Nigeria. How do you see this one panning out?
You know, Stuart Baxter is an enigma. He's a very fascinating man.
Yeah.
His whole thought process. Remember when he was at Kaizer Chiefs, Majoro eventually left the team because he preferred Ngata up front.
And people probably the most abused.
Yeah.
And Gabuza have to be the top two most abused South African footballers of
and
all time.
He had a go with the Chiefs fans. And it was crazy.
Yeah.
But he stuck to his idea and his plan, and he persisted with that man despite all of the abuse that he got from the fans. I mean, they were even booing him at some stage. So
and he said, "Stop booing Ngata." Sorry, I said Ngata is one of the top two most abused PSL players of all time. I will say.
So One thing I know, I've seen some fans on social media saying they pressured Baxter into playing Lodge. It was, and it boiled down to them putting him under pressure. And I would like to disagree with that.
Yeah.
Stuart Baxter is his own man.
Right.
If somebody thinks Stuart Baxter sits on his tablet at home or on his laptop and checks what's up on Twitter and then it's, okay, let me play this guy. They want him. No ways.
No chance.
There's no chance. That man will make his own decisions. He will do his own thing. And it's pretty much boils down to him. How and who he wants to employ in a game like this one.
So you reckon he'll stick with the same midfield, and the only thing that will make him think twice is that Lorch had a match-winning performance, and
I think he will have to acknowledge that, and then he'll have to see how he accommodates him, and what he does going into that game. So I don't think there's anybody who can pressure him into selecting any player that he doesn't want to play, or any player that he doesn't envisage a role for. It's purely going to be how and who he elects to send out there. And you take a look at the whole structure of a team like ours now. There will be a little bit of expectation on our part, and this is the part now.
This is where trouble
starts. You see, this is where the problem is. You know, it's, for me, it's cool when we all just sit and watch and we have no expectations, and then they surprise us. And then now you understand what then happens in this game, and there's so much at stake with the Nigerians. We have a history.
Oh, football Twitter is going to have a meltdown.
And we have a history with them, both the women's and the men's national teams, and at different levels of age group levels. We have a history with them that goes back several years. So you can just imagine now what happens now when you face them in a game like this one, and you've got a place in the semifinals at stake. And I mean, you can't, this is a massive game, I think again it's entirely up to him. You know, Baxter, I keep saying it, he'll surprise you. Remember what he did in the group stages? He had Ronwin Williams, and Williams played a blinder. Then the next game he's got
God
Kit, and then people are like, hey, wait a minute, what just happened?
And you're expecting Bruce Fuma in the next one.
Yeah. So
then Ronald Williams comes back.
But that's what I'm saying. That's why I'm saying I don't even want to speculate about what that man is going to do, because he will surprise you. He's never been one to follow convention or follow what people are saying. He's his own man, and to the frustration of a lot of the fans. I mean, go on social media, there's people saying Baxter out right now.
What?
They started a trend. They want him gone. They don't care what happened at Cairo. They're like, so I see some of these guys are saying that result happened in spite of him. Not because of him. That's the logic out there.
So
you can imagine in a game like this one. So that's why I'm saying, you know, South Africans, we're a special bunch, I just don't know. You know, sometimes you just marvel at how we get married to our views. Like, hey, this man must go back to Chiefs. We want another coach there at national team level. We don't want him. So I think for me, I can't hype this game enough. It's massive. And the fact that Nigeria have got a score to settle with us, because we beat them there,
it dials,
and then we're through here, and also we have a history dating back many years, and I'm sure they have a point to prove.
Yeah.
They have some questions that they need answers to.
Now, Tugs, before I let you go and wrap up our conversation, we have something we like to call the upset and playmaker of the week. I'll give you options for our upset of the week: Bafana beating Egypt 1-0, Benin knocking out Morocco on penalties at the Africa Cup of Nations, Madagascar's unbelievable Africa Cup of Nations run, beating the DRC in the penalties to make the quarters, and switching a little to Wimbledon, 15-year-old Coco Gauff knocking out Venus Williams. Which of those options would you say was the upset of the week?
I tell you what, I will still give it to Bafana.
Okay.
Because I mean, they were called Mabena. no one gave them a hope.
Not a hope.
And for me, I think it has to be regarded as that. It's the shock of the tournament so far. I acknowledge what the Madagascars of this world have done and so on and so on. But I think it has to be the upset of the tournament. But I'd also like to acknowledge Coco, because I think for me, we are witnessing changing of guard. It's happening right before us. Because now she's
it hurts. Embarrassing Venus like that.
I still think Venus should have left long time ago.
No, 15 year old,
these things happen. How many times have we seen this? Like, tennis, it happens all the time. You get some snooty 15 year old coming in and shocking you. And this is what they do in tennis. But I think for me, she's a breath of fresh air.
Wonderful.
And if she keeps this up, I think we are witnessing a baton being passed, grudgingly so, I might add. But
from Serena to Coco.
So I mean, if she keeps her feet on the ground, I expect some great things from her, because she's an amazing talent.
Right, let's go to Playmaker, and the options here are Crusaders winning a 10th Super Rugby title, the USA winning back-to-back FIFA Women's World Cup trophies, and while we're there, Megan Rapinoe's golden boot performance at that World Cup with 6 goals and 3 assists to her name, and something we've not talked about so far between you and I, Faf du Plessis's 100 against Australia at the Cricket World Cup, albeit in for very little consequence in the sense that they've come back home.
I think for me, because of the occasion and because of everything that's happened outside of the pitch, which had nothing to do with what was actually taking place, and the craziness, the destructive, the distraction, and also you throw in Donald Trump in the mix. So I think for me, I would give it to her.
Megan Rapinoe.
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
I would give it to her.
Finally, we get a fair decision.
Because as far as I'm concerned, that soap opera there is just getting started. Because now the question is, will she be invited to the White House? And if she is, will she turn up? So will she turn up? So we are all watching. And I saw Trump congratulated her and the team. But Trump being Trump, this is just getting started. You'll see what actually transpires. So that's the one I'm getting my popcorn out for. We'll see how this plays out. But I'll give it to her.
All right, fantastic stuff. Thank you very much, Mr. Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Catch him at Ntloko M on Twitter. Fabulous conversation that we've had, and that's how we're going to wrap up this week's episode. Thank you so much for having, for coming to studio, sir. As you know, I hold your views and you in the highest regard.
Always a pleasure.
All right.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Sure.
That's it from me, Sbu Mjikeliso, and you've been listening to the Sports Live podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Do also catch us on timeslive.co.za, as well as Sowetan Live, Business Live. We are also on Iono FM, the Apple Podcast Store, or wherever you get your podcasts. It could be Spotify, Stitcher, CastBox, PocketCast, wherever. To connect with us, please use the hashtag SportsLive. Share your comments with us at TimesLive or at Sowetan Live on Twitter. A big thank you goes out to the Multimedia Live team led by Scott Peter Smith and producer Paige Muller, as well as the Tiso Black Star Digital Sports Department headed by Mninawa Mchana Ntloko. Our sound and audio mixer is Innocent Manyike. From us at the Sports Live podcast, it's goodbye for now.